This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture. I'm Chua Eun-taek. According to a new report by the Economist Intelligence Unit, South and Southeast Asia accounts for approximately 25% of global food loss, the second highest in the world. Here to explain the facts and figures behind that report is Senior Analyst and Asia Public Policy Lead at the Economist Intelligence Unit, Sumana Rajaratnam. Sumana, welcome. An estimated 1 in 8 people in the world, or some 870 million, suffer from chronic undernourishment despite the fact that the UN Food and Agriculture Organization saying the world produces enough food to feed everyone. What's happening?
Yeah, I think that this is really, you've pointed to the center of the story, right? This gap between production of food and consumption of food. And the gap is because there's food loss or food waste. There's a bit of difference between the two, but basically between the food that we lose in the production, transportation, planting and harvesting process, and the food that we waste after we cook it, that's where this big gap lies, and that's why there's that 870 million people that suffer from chronic undernourishment.
Where's the spillage happening? Because the difference between food loss and food waste, as you mentioned, one is, I think, earlier, and one is happens at a consumer level.
Right. So, I mean, perhaps I'll just sort of give you a very straightforward definition of food loss. It's actually quite a complex process, but there's no consensus on the definition. But food loss occurs when edible products are either destroyed when they are processed, they are degraded when they are being transported, or they are consumed by pests at some point during their planting or harvesting or during their transport. And food waste is really, that explores sort of consumer behavior, right? So once the food is sort of processed and sold, that's during the retail and wholesale distribution of it. That's when consumers actually throw away food or they waste food once they have it. So there's actually two different kinds of definitions, and each has a very different relationship with food security. So when you're looking at food security, we need to look at these two concepts. And one of the things that has come out of this EIU report was that food loss should focus on stages that are close to the farm, so that the kind of initial stage, and food waste should focus on things that are close to the fork, so after they've been processed. And also there's a big difference between developing and developed regions. So a lot of food loss occurs in developing countries, such as Southeast Asia, some of the countries there, and most food waste happens in the developed world.
If there's no consensus between economists or scientists on how to measure food loss or how to accurately quantify food loss, do we know how serious the nature of the problem is?
I think that statistic that you pulled out at the beginning of the interview really speaks to that. 870 million people around the world suffer from chronic undernourishment, and that's really because of this gap between consumption and production, and that's really something that we have to address. So yes, it is a very difficult problem that we are facing, but as I was trying to point out, there's a difference between developing and developed countries. So in developing countries, for example, infrastructure, you know, things like cold chains and logistics, improper handling of food because of the way that farms use technology or not as mechanized, and also the diet, right? So when you look at how food might be wasted, things like vegetables, things like rice and cassava, those are things that perish much more quickly than meat, for example, or than processed food. And those obviously also are some of the main constituents of the diets of people in developing nations. So it affects both sides of the story.
We know how many people are hungry, and we know we have the capacity and capability to produce enough food. It's just a matter of transporting or transferring that production into the mouth of those people.
It is a bit different also in developed countries, right? So in developed countries, there are higher incomes, food is really quite available all over the place, which makes it a lot more dispensable as well, right? So the kind of irony is that food waste occurs because people prepare too much food or food spoils before it's consumed. And that really speaks to a dynamic that there's a very big role that income plays on determining when there's food loss versus food waste.
So is increasing food production one of the ways to combat food deficiency? Because the supply chain of a single food item can cross many borders and pass through many processes. If we can't accurately measure that, the extent of food loss, can we just increase food production?
I don't think that increasing food production really is the way to go. I mean, I think that there is a lot of food that's produced already. And one track that needs to be addressed is obviously minimizing both the loss and minimizing the waste. Now, minimizing loss, you have to tackle things like infrastructure, making sure that cold chains are set up properly, making sure that farmers have access to proper kinds of seeds, to proper techniques, to proper sort of pricing information, you know, that involves, say, setting up wireless or broadband technology to ensure that they can be connected, supplying them with market information. So there's a lot of things that can be addressed on that side of the equation. You know, corruption can also be a factor in a lot of developing countries when it comes to these types of products. And also, you know, the problem with just simply expanding production is that, of course, that places a lot of stress on the environment, right? So you don't want to be stressing the environment even more. In fact, minimizing food waste and food loss is probably a much better way of sustaining environmental practices.
How much of food loss is caused by pests and diseases?
Actually, I don't know what the number is in terms of pests and diseases, and also that is it's a variable type of number. So it depends on the region in terms of how much kind of pesticides farmers have available to them, and also some of these diseases can be one-off events, you know, where there's a sort of pest or some kind of insect that comes through and wipes out a crop. So there's a lot of variability in that number. It's similar to types of harvest as well, right? So depending on the crop that you plant, if there is too much rain or if there's a drought, that can affect production as well. So what happens is that, you know, also in developed countries, what they are able to do is increase production to a point where they cover these types of losses, right? So with so much income, they are available to increase production so that food is very secure. And that in and of itself can lead to more food waste. You know, as cheaper food gets pushed to the table, there may be a tendency to waste it.
Are leaders and policymakers currently prioritizing this issue of food loss and food waste? Do you see this as a trend in countries around the world or in Asia?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I think that on the back of this research that the EIU has done with DuPont, there's certainly a lot of stakeholders that we have been engaging with, you know, in terms of multinationals, in terms of policymakers, in various governments all over the world, actually. And also in terms of kind of engagement with other private companies. So it's definitely a big issue, and there's a lot of interest in the topic.
What are some of the things they're doing, and what are the main stumbling blocks?
Well, I think that you know, one thing, if you're looking at developing countries, that the solution for reducing food loss and food insecurity are directly related, right? So ensuring that food supply chain and there's sort of accessibility and availability and the quality of food has to be improved. You know, you're looking at farming methods, structural infrastructure. But, you know, those types of things, including improving farming methods and increasing mechanization, those are not always as easy as one would think, right? So, you know, setting up infrastructure takes a while. It takes a lot of political will, and it certainly takes a lot of money. Regulations as well are some of the things that policymakers are looking at: proper regulations, like effective import and export systems, a stable political environment for sure, minimal corruption. Those also are likely to reduce food loss. But, you know, as you will well know, those are not things that occur overnight.
You're listening to Sumana Rajaratnam, Senior Analyst and Asia Public Policy Lead from the Economist Intelligence Unit. More on food waste and food loss after the break. BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back. If you have just joined us, we are speaking today to Sumana Rajaratnam. He is a senior analyst and Asia public policy lead at the Economist Intelligence Unit. This is coming off the back of a report released by the EIU, which states that 1 in 8 people in the world suffer from chronic undernourishment. This despite the fact that we have the capability to produce enough food for everyone. In South and Southeast Asia alone, it accounts for 25% of global food loss. You referenced earlier the difference in food waste in developed and developing countries. And does this not point to the fundamental weakness of market economies and that market economies are the best allocator of resources?
Well, not really. I mean, that's the market allocation is one way of allocating resources. It's proved to be a pretty efficient one. There's no reason to say that any other way of allocating resources is better. And suddenly disrupting that kind of free market environment might not lead to necessarily a better outcome. But I think that in terms of developed countries, the problems in terms of food waste are really a result of consumer behavior. And those kinds of things can be addressed at both the cultural and political level, right? So throughout the rich world, wasting food is almost socially acceptable. And that's something in terms of consumer attitudes that must be changed. And that will be undoubtedly a big challenge. On the policy front, countries have to look, in developed countries especially, have to look at what programs they have that are contributing to food waste. You know, for example, subsidies on certain food items that artificially reduce the price may be promoting increased waste. So there are things that you can look at. Malaysia actually is in a very interesting position if you look at this DuPont Global Food Security Index, because Malaysia has gotten to the point where it is a middle to high income country, which means that it's actually at the point where there's very little food loss in Malaysia, and it certainly scores very well in that category. But at the same time, you know, having not sort of been a high income or not been in that high income bracket for a very long time, the kind of consumer behavior hasn't changed to the point where it is socially acceptable to waste food. And so in countries like Malaysia, there's actually an opportunity to look out for these types of things and these types of attitudes and perceptions that one would need to look out for in terms of developing sustainably and in an environmentally sound manner.
What are some of the economic policy incentives we can do to change behavior, modify behaviors?
Well, you know, for example, in the U.S., there are a lot of sort of soup kitchens where people can either volunteer the time or give away food. But, you know, there's a lot of perception amongst, say, restaurants or hotel chains or different types of outlets that produce food in terms of the kind of liability that's attached to giving away food. And so that's one point of regulations that governments can look at. Another thing is labeling, right? So when you go into a supermarket and you're checking a label, not only may you be looking for nutritional information, but there's also information in terms of when the food will spoil or turn bad. And sometimes labels are unclear. Sometimes labels may not have the correct type of information. They may be overly cautious. And so those are also factors and regulations that can lead to reducing food waste if those are sort of dealt with.
Speaking about labeling, and there's a lot of secrecy or lack of transparency in the meat industry, for example, in the U.S., the example that you cited. So how can a policymaker, for example, examine where the wastage is or what can be done to improve the accuracy of this labeling? And
right. So, I mean, in terms of the U.S., one of the things that I had mentioned was that robust system of food banks, and these reduce food waste by accepting donations from food companies. But one thing that policymakers can look at is really the tax incentives for donating food to these food banks. So maybe those can be increased so that they're not so small and they offset the kind of perceived risks that are associated with donating food. In terms of labeling, I think that many developed countries are kind of tackling that problem. You know, there are a lot of products out there in the market, And it's certainly not easy to have one common standard for labeling everything. But, you know, I think that moving towards kind of more transparent labeling, more consistent labeling, that's something that will allow consumers more information and will allow them to decide on their behavior as well. And that's something that can reduce food waste in developed countries.
Singapore is a very interesting example in that it has no natural resources and it relies, its food security relies on imports from around the world. How are they addressing food security?
Right. So I think that you're completely right there when you say that Singapore, you know, does rely on a lot of food that's brought in from all over the world, actually. And you really now tend to get a very diverse set of countries that are exporting food into Singapore. So I think that one is, which is relatively easy for Singapore, being the small and open economy that it is to ensure that it has a diverse set of suppliers, so that if for any reason, you know, one set of suppliers gets affected by a certain, you know, sort of slow harvest or something like that, there are other sets that can offset that fall. And the other thing is that I think, you know, keeping sort of taxes low on the import of food and making sure that open environment persists is good for food security in Singapore. And obviously, I mean, it's not very easy for Singapore being land starved as it is, but it has also employed certain methods of vertical farming and kind of modern farming techniques. While you know, this is very small at the moment and certainly not in any way possible to sort of deal with a sudden disruption in supplies, These are certain things that they can do to make sure that their food security increases.
You mentioned earlier that food waste is more common in higher income Western countries, but is the trend of consumer food wastage actually reflected among industrialized cities and countries around the world, regardless of culture?
Yeah, that's certainly something that we see in our index. There's a high correlation between income and food waste, and also income and food security. So that the irony is that the more secure your country or your city is when you're looking at it from a food security angle, the more waste there tends to be as well. And that's really sort of consumer behavior and the way that people think about food.
Food security is not very relatable, just like climate change. It's not until something disastrous happens, a typhoon or an earthquake, that we see how it impacts our daily life. What are the economic and environmental costs of food loss and a lack of food security? And is it related to climate change?
Well, certainly. I mean, when we are looking at food security, we're looking at things like affordability and availability of food. And so any types of disruption to prices will affect affordability. And that type of disruption, when we're looking at it from the index that we've built, can be, you know, one of the impacts can be climate change. But I think that you are right to point out that, you know, I think that in developed countries or in countries where food is relatively secure, people might not necessarily think about this on a daily basis. But at the beginning of this chat, you did bring up that rather startling number of 870 million people that are undernourished all around the world. And those, you know, people are affected by issues of food security on a daily basis in many countries in the world. There is a relationship, obviously, between developed and developing countries. But even that, you know, within Southeast Asia, for example, there's a diverse set of economies, and the relationship between income and food security, as I said, is quite a strong one. And so in more industrialized, in countries with higher average GDP per capita, you are going to get more issues of food waste as compared to food loss.
Should we start by banning all buffet-style restaurants and caterers?
Well, that might be a bit of a stretch. But I mean, I think that's really something that you've pointed out, that is a situation in developed countries, especially where, you know, we are producing sort of serving sizes that are much bigger than 20, 30 years ago. We are producing a lot more food than is necessarily needed. So, I mean, one thing is that shifts, right? Is that, you know, can we shift consumer behavior, consumer preferences to the point where they are sort of have increased demand for smaller servings, for sort of more thoughtful serving sizes, that kind of thing, right? And also, this is where regulations come in as well, right? Is there an easy way that a restaurant that is, for example, serving a buffet, is there an easy way that they can then channel this food to someone that needs it in their community? And so there are things that can be done.
Yeah, so it tends to get politicized. I remember, I think 1 or 2 years ago, the mayor in New York, Bloomberg, the then mayor, Michael Bloomberg, he wanted to introduce a ban on extremely large soda size cups in cinemas. And there's so much backlash because the opposition frame it as a infringement on their personal liberty. As a policymaker, how do you go beyond, how do you engage them beyond this political theater that goes on the television screens and on the papers? Because it's a health issue as well, right?
Right. And so, you know, I think that it's probably good to go back to this definition of food security that we use when we developed this index, which is when people at all times have physical, social, and economic access to sufficient and nutritious food that meets their dietary needs for a healthy an active life, right? So we are going beyond just what is the baseline into something where people are able to live a healthy and active life. And these issues, I mean, certainly food security, as you pointed out, might not necessarily be something that's on the minds of people every single day, especially in developed countries. But it is a highly politicized topic it is something that's very difficult for policymakers to deal with for all sorts of issues, right? I mean, for example, there are a lot of governments in the world and certainly in the developed world that offer big subsidies to farmers that may distort markets in a certain way. But at the same time, you know, they have to deal with political reality. So it's certainly not an easy topic to deal with by any means.
Thank you very much for speaking to us.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to Sumana Rajarathnam, Senior Analyst and Asia Public Policy Lead at the Economist Intelligence Unit, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.